Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye, live with The Fed. Did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. Absolutely. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware.
All right, it's the Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Happy New Year, everybody. We had some problems, as you heard in the background there. Somebody forgot to hang up the network, and yours truly was being preempted by some barking dogs. And what a better way to start your new year than to preempt Inside the Eye Live with some barking dogs. So here we are, everybody. Anyways, from Riyadh. That's right, from Riyadh. I don't know, man, where is that page? Oh, it should be over here. From Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, this is The Fetch, and you are indeed live. Today's date is January the 5th, 2019, everybody. 2019. That sounds a little loud. Okay. 2019, and a good Saturday morning to all of you listening in the United States and Canada, and a good late afternoon to early evening to all of you listening in European and Asian time zones, and of course, wherever you are listening out there on the World Wide Web or FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets. May all be well with you and yours. It was a very nice day here in Riyadh, or at least what little I saw of it, but there were some online reports of a sandstorm earlier today, although by the time I awoke and checked, I did not see any personal visual confirmation of any of this. Now, temperatures today did hit a high of about 71 degrees. Guys at the studio, we seem to have some background noise. I got to get rid of that too, but we seem to have some background noise coming from the studio side. If you guys can check into that, would be appreciated. But it sounds like somebody's still online in the background. With sunset hitting, let's see. Yeah, it's kind of maddening trying to do a show like this, guys. I did see, let me watch my script. I did not see any personal visual confirmation of this. Yeah, there's somebody still connected in the background. 10 miles, anyways, winds hit about 10 miles per hour out of the southeast, with sunset hitting about 45 minutes ago. Yeah, about 45 minutes ago. We have backed off the highs and are currently sitting at 66 degrees, while temperatures throughout the useful part of the evening should reach a chilly 58 degrees around midnight on the way down to a low of 47 degrees in the hour before sunrise. Now, last Thursday, I took a flight in from Riyadh, left about 11:30. It was a little bit delayed, and got into Riyadh about 3:30, quite frankly, to the hotel. Listened to the very last half hour of the Paul English and Michael Tom Goodrich show, and thought that was very interesting. I was going to call in, but heck, it was going along so well. I thought no need to call in, so I just kind of let the show go. And no need, of course, it was in good hands, obviously. So it was just a nice, relaxing flight. What I did, though, is I sent Emily, those of you who have been listening to the show, you know who Emily is, but I sent her to the Philippines on the same night. So we took her down to the airport. But anyways, guys, as we were trying to say, we have very light winds, about 10 miles per hour out of the southeast. And I'll tell you what, my whole script looks like it's just disappeared, which is not a great thing. At all. It's gone. Guys, this is now a It's a tough start to the 2019 year, man. We couldn't get on. Now I've just lost my entire script. It didn't save, and it's gone. Goodbye. But we'll get through it. Don't worry. I'll just kind of make things up as we go along. And I've got this hiss in the background. Hopefully you're not hearing it, but I can certainly hear it. And it was good morning, everybody. You know, we had a great, we're already going into the first break. Shoot, man, it's 6:22. I can barely even get my story started. But, you know, we had a great end of the year, everybody. If you were listening to Inside the Eye Live over the last of the year, I got. Let me just take this call just for the heck of it. I don't have my touch screen anymore. That really sucks. Okay, it's okay. I think that. Hi, Vera. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live. Happy New Year.
Hi, Dennis. Happy 2019. We're in there now.
Yes, 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 yes. Happy, happy. How are you?
Pretty good. I just called to let you know that the it still sounds screwed up, but we don't sound screwed up.
Yeah, even here, I can hear hissing and stuff in the background like something's still connected and it's not, doesn't sound so good for my end. Yeah, exactly. It's not something.
Because, when you first were on, there was just click, 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 click. There was no sound from you, and I thought,
somebody else was connected. So basically the show was preempted by somebody else, and so we were not able to get on
the
show. Well,
maybe the other guy never hung up.
That's why you heard the dogs barking in the background.
That's right.
They don't seem to know that Saturday is actually kind of a big show here on the network, and so what can I say? Man?
Oh, yeah, so they want to put their two cents worth in, eh?
Yeah, I think they just don't know better, but I have people in the audience telling me they can actually hear somebody in the background talking. So apparently they were able to connect me, but they were not able to disconnect that person, something like that. So it's going to be a long show. We're going to try to get through this. Hopefully we can fix it before we get too far into the show. It's a three-hour show, as everybody knows. And we've got a great show line, Vera. We've got Monica Schaefer is going to come in hour number three.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, she's coming on hour number three. And then I've got Alan Buttle from The Alan Buttle Show, which broadcasts out of the UK. I'm not sure where he's broadcasting from or if it's just like a podcast or if he's on a network. I'm not sure about that. But he's going to be on an hour number two. So we've got a very full show, very easy show for me to start the year. Obviously, I don't have to talk too much. I got two guests. So now we just got to solve this issue of getting a clean line so I can actually concentrate on the conversation.
Okay, I'll pray for the whatever fairies to
yeah everybody sorry about that so nothing to do with Inside the Eye Live, guys. We showed up on time as usual. We're doing our job. So.
But maybe you were out drinking somewhere.
No, not in Saudi, man. Come on, I'm in Saudi.
Not
so I'm
in
back
Saudi. Right. All right. Anyways, Happy New Year. I'll let you go and get into your rant there, man.
Yeah, I'm trying. I just accidentally even closed my script. So I don't even have my script open. So it's going to be difficult. I got to do something over the break and I got to see when the break's coming too. So guys, I know we're coming up on a break sometime.
So there's about 4 minutes before break.
Well,
bye from me.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. I'm going in. Guys, it's just a rough start. Not on my fault. I was ready to rock and roll this show, guys. It's the start of the new year. I just wanted to say, let's see. Can I do it this way? I need to go to man. Oh, man alive. You know, once you get to Saudi, man, everything gets a little bit skewed. No doubt about it. Everything gets exceptionally skewed when you try to do shows from Saudi. Make no mistake about it. It's a very, very challenging streaming environment, unless you are like at an institution or something. Anyways, good. We do have the break. That's the break, everybody. Hopefully we can resolve things over the break. It's The Fetch. I'll be right back right after this. Okay, everybody. Welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. Again, today's date is January the 5th, 2019. That's right, everybody, 2019. So I've got the year right. I've got the month right. And that, I think, is going to be a good start to the year after that very rough first half hour to the show for 2019. I think we're formally ready to go now. Audio should be good. We've made the adjustments here. We did see what's going on. Debugged. Everybody's been kicked off the network except for yours truly. So I think we're going to be able to run
with 2.5 hours now of intelligent media for the politically aware. It's kind of funny. Somebody was just talking to me on Gab, gab.ai. You could follow me at Radio ITEL on gab.ai. And the guy runs his own micro FM broadcasting outlet. He says he's got about a 6-mile range on that puppy, and explained a little bit what he was doing, asked if we have archives, and he likes to do rebroadcasts and things like that. I said, hey, feel free to carry the show. And I was saying, like, we're very reliable. We're very reliable. We're always on, right? So I was just talking up the show, you know, trying to get him to and he says, well, I like Andrew Carrington Hitchcock and a few others like Mike Walsh and other people that we've obviously associated with over the years. And I said, hey, Andrew, Andy's been a longtime sponsor of the show, so welcome. You can syndicate this darn thing. But and then we had the snafu to start the year. But guys, we're back. I think everything is okay now. I'm just minus my script. That's it. Trying to fix everything. I accidentally closed my script. But I think we're still going to be okay because we've got guests again lined up. I got Alan Buttle is going to be here from the Alan Buttle Show. It broadcasts live. I don't know if it's broadcasting live. I really got to check with this guy. But he does broadcast from the UK. He's going to be on in hour number two. Monica Schaefer, sweetie. She's going to be on hour number three. And boy, are we going to have a great conversation with Monica. She just finished serving, of course, that 10-month jail sentence inside of a German jail for questioning. She didn't question anything, actually. She just did a video apologizing to her mother for the way she treated her mother as a child growing up. And Jews hauled her into court inside of Germany, even though she's a Canadian citizen. So she spent 10 months in jail. Her brother's in jail now for about 3.5 year sentence so far, and they're trying to tack on more. We'll get Monica to update all of us on that. But she's going to be coming in on hour number three, so you're going to want to definitely stay tuned for that, for this start to the new year. Now, it is listener-sponsored and supported radio. It does rely upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. And I'll tell you what, we got to work on the studio feed part of it. But I think I have a solution. If Nighthawk is listening, we may have a solution for you to actually fix that issue. I got to test market a little bit more, but we may actually have a solution for you to be able to get through this problem with Skype. That would be a great thing if we can actually get that done. What else is news? Not a whole lot. The ITEL Cat Report, we just want to say again, we did all the commercial sponsorships for this show, which is really the ITEL Cat Report, sponsored by Frederick C. Blackburn and Blackburn Nine's Breakfast Club and North Kakalaki Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures, great and small, and as well as Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. Both have agreed to extend their commercial sponsorships. These are paid sponsorships. It's not a whole lot of money, but it's still money. Money's real. It does buy real things. We'd like to say right now, just straight up, yeah, Nighthawk, we are okay. Good to go. If you're listening, let me just send a message, guys. We want to clear everything up, you know, just for you, because obviously you, the listener, are the most important. And people are just checking in now. So they're just checking in. I'm just keeping everybody posted here. So just bear with us. Where were we? Both Andrew Carrington and Frederick C. Blackburn have agreed to the commercial sponsorship. Now, as start 2019, we just want to report that right now the financial health of Inside the Eye Live is good. We had some very good donations coming in towards the end of the year. That helped keep things in the black. We're in the black at least through the first quarter, and we appreciate that. Again, we do this. We're happy to give our time. We do invest our own capital into this project. We do believe it is one of the more prescient leading shows of its kind out there currently doing live radio on a network type environment. You're not going to get this type of show anywhere out there. We do know that our budget, operating budget, is around $800 to $900 per year. Quite frankly, that includes, like just last night, buying new bandwidth just to run the show from Saudi for a month. That's not a cheap thing. It's not expensive. Again, it's about $25, $30. About $30, quite frankly, a little bit less than 30, probably 27 or so. But that's every month. You got to pay it. Otherwise, you're not going to get out. You've heard how bad the show will get if I use the internet from the hotels here. So these are just issues that we actually have to deal with on a business side. Starting 2019, we just want to report that we are in good health as far as the show goes, financially, technologically. Everything is in play. We still need to fix a few things, like the laptop with the touchscreen still is not fixed. We fixed the screen to where it's actually full screen now, but the touchscreen mechanism is not working. And when you're doing shows as we do here, that's very complicated. What we like to do is obviously be able to just touch the screen, go to the next step. So that's going to be a couple hundred dollars, just under about $170 upgrade that we're going to need to raise. But it's, again, we are currently in the black, and that's a very, very good thing to start the year. And we want to keep everything that way, folks. That's just the business side of it. Hope you had a great Christmas, a great holiday, a great New Year. And everything is going well with you and your family. This is obviously first and foremost the most important. For me, everything has been going well. Thank you very much. Again, we sent Emily to the Philippines. I swear we were a little bit worried. She's not the most technologically savvy person, and I just gave her a nice phone for Christmas, right? And so I told her, when you get to Dubai, ask around, because it was across from Dubai and then lands in Manila. And so I told her, when you get to Dubai, and it's kind of cute, by the way, because she hadn't traveled home in 12 years, and that's a long time to be away from home. So finally, we had enough money to send her home, pay all the government fees and visas and exit visas and all this other stuff you got to do. So we got Emily out of the country, and I walked her through the most of the process, you know, to the gates and everything, because she hadn't been done this in 12 years. She's been stuck basically in Jordan. So she got on the plane, saw her off the plane, and then we worried for like the next day and a half because she never checked in, because there's a 13 and a half layover in Dubai. I told her, go to the hotel, enjoy the hotel, sleep, take a shower, relax. She apparently refused that. She's landed. We've checked in. Everything is fine. She's sleeping now. But she arrived this morning in Manila, and everything is fine. Thank you. But, you know, she just didn't want to go to the hotel. She didn't want to miss the flight. She says, no, 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 I'm going to stay right here. So she, the poor thing, she stayed at the airport for 13 and a half hours for the next flight. You know, the only reason I did that was because, A, price. It was a cheaper flight. And I hate to do that to her, but it's just, I just could not afford the really expensive flight. And then second, she could go out with me. She could spend some time with me at the airport, which I thought would be fun for her. And certainly I know she enjoyed that by her face. So we're happy she's home with her family, her mother, and all that kind of cool stuff. So from our side, we want to say thank you to everybody who has helped us over the years, financially, spiritually, you name it. Thank you so much. You know, we've had a great run so far, and now obviously we start 2019, and we hope to continue to be on our feet. But basically, we just first, let's get to the CAT report again, sponsored by North Cackalacky Trading Post, good services and solutions for all creatures great and small, as well as Blackburn Nine's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Frederick C. Blackburn. Again, you can hear Blackburn Nine's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 o'clock p.m. on the Spreaker Radio Network. And again, the links are available at Blackburn Nine's Breakfast Club. Blackburn Nine Trading Post, I should say, blackburn9tradingpost.org. That's blackburn9tradingpost.org. And the CAT report's more about the missing dad, you know, missing Dennis. I'm gone. And so what's happened is when I leave Jordan, I have two sweaters that I kind of like sweat up a little bit, and I keep it behind for the first month or so because the cats really are attracted to my scent. So I had one sweater that was pretty well worn, well, even slept in. And the cats, both Bruiser and One-Eye, were fighting over that darn sweater the first night. Both of them wanted to sleep on that sweater, which usually happens. So anyways, they were fighting over this sweater. But it's really been the case where we've had some really nice weather in Jordan. It's been mating season, quite frankly. It's been mating season. Bruiser has been a tear. He's been marking up the house. I'm ready to kick him out of the house, you know. But he's been making problems, screaming up a storm, and the poor guy's blind, so he really can't attract a mate. He's trying his best. His instincts are telling him what to do, but he just can't do it. One Eye, for his part, has been coming back home filthy. And filthy just means that he is not clean. Let me see if I can take this again. Hold on. Okay. It's going to connect. Vera, hi. Welcome back. Inside the Eye Live.
Hi. See, you sound normal on the phone. It's still echoing. So is there a way that we can get in touch with...
Well, actually, you might want to check your side because we've gotten multiple comments that the audio is good.
Really?
Yeah, we've got multiple comments that the audio's feed is good. Audio is good. Everything's good. So unless
so
I'm...
So there's no echoes anymore?
No, everything's
okay, my
good.
End is still echoing.
No, yeah, another person just chimed in. Audio is fine. So check your side. Check your side. You know, we're trying to get perfect. Everything is set now. We've done the adjustments here and the adjustments at the studio, so we're fine. Everybody's on top of the ball now. It was just a problem with the previous.
Okay. I won't bug you anymore.
Thank you.
Bye. Oh,
see you, Vera. Thank you. Yeah, guys, we are we're fine. Everything is fine. I can see from my side. Everything feels fine, and if it feels fine, I can tell it's usually fine. I can tell when a studio feed's going well or not, and it seems like everything's going great. But basically, back to the cats, you know. One Eye's just been coming home filthy, but what he likes to do is he just goes out all day, and then as sundown comes, about an hour and a half after sundown to an hour and a half before sundown, he'll actually be waiting right at the door, and he'll be like screaming up a storm, open, 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 and of course you got to let him up. But we have one girl still at the house taking care of the cats while Emily is gone. She's very familiar with the cats. She knows the cats. They do respond to her. They know her very, very well because she's been living with us for a long time now. So everything is under control. We got the house under control. The cats are safe. They got plenty of food to last a couple months while Emily returns. And so everything is great on the cat side of it. Everything is good here. Start so far. 2019 is good. Knock on wood type of thing. But that is kind of the ITEL Cat Report. Again, proudly sponsored by North Kakalaki Trading Post Good Services and Solutions for all creatures, great and small. And by Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Blackbird9TradingPost.org. That's Blackbird9TradingPost.org. And for more information, be sure to check out Blackbird9TradingPost.org. That's Blackbird9TradingPost.org for more information. And let's see if I can make this work here. I did some recording this weekend. I hope I have it set properly. We will find out. No, that's not working properly. That's okay there. Microphone, USB, speakers, Realtek. That's correct. Why are you not going out live, dudes? Why are you not going out live? Let's see here. That's muted. Okay, maybe that's why. And just checking, guys. You know, we apologize for this. That's not muted. Okay, I think this is going to work.
Oi, vey. Oi, Gewalt. It's like another shower.
Oi, vey.
Oi, vey.
Oi, vey, everybody.
Hollywood is run by Jews. It's owned by Jews. Very goddamn angry at some of the Jews.
I thrive on boyum tears.
Oy vey!
Oy vey, everybody!
The Oy vey moment is proudly sponsored by
Hitchcock, author of The Synagogue of Satan, updated, expanded, and uncensored. The Synagogue of Satan, updated, expanded, and uncensored, features a rapturous 144,000 words that is replete with additional articles never before seen in print. And after having its distribution banned by Amazon and Lulu, The Synagogue of Satan, updated, expanded, and uncensored, is now available from Andy himself at andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. Get your copy today, won't you? Of course, don't forget to listen to Andy's The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, which streams Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Eurofolk Radio at eurofolkradio.com. To listen, simply visit eurofolkradio.com during showtime and click on the Listen Live link or visit andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com for Andy's free show archives, which comprises one of the most extensive guest lists in the alternative media.
Yeah, that's the new version, everybody. We've just re-recorded that for the new year because the book is no longer available at the One Press. It's now available directly from Andy himself at AndrewCarringtonHitchcock.com. And once you go there, you can click on the links to get to the various links to buy the book and definitely get that book. A funny story, a long time ago, but probably over a year ago, I was watching some YouTube videos and somebody was talking about, hey, I've got my new book list out. And he had like four books and he plopped it down on the YouTube. And the first book he plopped down was Andrew Carrington Hitchcock's Synagogue of Satan. I'm like, wow, that's kind of cool. And there were a couple other books I can't tell you. I just don't recall. But I thought that was actually kind of cool. But that is the latest version of the recording there. So that's the 2019 version of the Oy Vey Moment recording. And it's I got my voice. Maybe I do another take. Maybe we do another take. Anyways, this week's Oy Vey Moment is going to come to us, I think, from two places. Both of them are going to be the United States, though. So. One of those is this story. Yes, it's still no, that one. I just want to make sure we are still on a pertinent story. Sometimes these Jews just recycle stories and then they're like 55 years old and it's like, oh, my mother died in the Holocaust. It's so terrible. Let's see. I don't know if you heard that story, by the way, man, I haven't seen enough of it, but it's actually, wow. Calls are coming in the door. Cool. Happy New Year, everybody. Yes, hi. Welcome to Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware.
Yeah, your storm front, Daily Stormer, Shill Frank from North Carolina will be calling in soon to give gun weapons on your family show.
You know what? I don't know why you call this show. Just curious.
Dude,
I'm just curious.
I thought you were a truth, man. I thought you were a truth, and now you're a Daily Stormer Stormfront.
Where is Daily Stormer Stormfront here? Seriously, dude. Seriously.
You got to be out of your mind.
No, here's the thing. You know, a lot of people have been complaining about your calls. A lot to me, okay? But let me just say something. It's our show, and we care. It's our show, and we care. That's the problem with this guy. He doesn't care. He doesn't have any morals. He doesn't have any ethics. This is a huge problem. Every week, he wants to come in and hijack a show with his BS about things that have absolutely nothing to do with me and this show, and everybody here knows it. I fielded about 22 complaints over the holidays. 22 complaints about this guy. I don't care if he was my follower at this stage on Liberty Forum, but look, 22 complaints from this guy. It's the holidays, we're having a good time, and the guy wants to come in and whine like some crybaby. Enough already, dude. Go find something better to do. We've heard your story. It's the same thing over and over and over again. I'm tired of it. The audience is tired of it. Deal with it, dude. Seriously, just go deal with it because, quite frankly, it's the start of the new year. We don't need to be doing this for another freaking year because you got nothing better to do with your time. I don't need your lectures. I don't need any of this stuff anymore. Folks, I'm that person. I'm sorry. I've lost my patience. Somebody's saying, Fitch, you know, no, too many complaints over the holidays. Anyways. Stormfront. What do I have to do with Stormfront? My goodness. How stupid is that, quite frankly? It's stupid. I'm not even a fan of Stormfront, and everybody knows it. Let's see here. Where were we? Well, he kind of got me off track here. There was a story coming out recently. I think it was coming out UK, and I got to get more on this. Maybe we'll try to have it for the next show. But there was a guy and a woman, a married couple, and I believe something like the father had died, and she came out. And she talked about how this guy lived an absolute fraudulent life, about how he was some Holocaust survivor and how, oh, poor him, his uncle died in the gas chambers and all this. And she came out, a Jewish woman came out, like the daughter or the niece or something. And she basically admitted that this man was never in Germany. He spent the entire war inside of Britain and then migrated to Australia and then onto America. And now there's rumors that the FBI is looking into this whole case. And you know what? It should be that way. We have been defrauded by the Jewish community with all of these lies and Holocaust BS stories for so long. We have been guilt-tripped for so long about, oh, woe is me, as if somehow the American soldier who died on the front line is meaningless to these people. And even the American soldier on the front line, who wasn't necessarily the nicest guy due to the apparently the Jewish programming, equally, if you listen to Michael Tom Goodrich, but at the same time, to the German soldiers who died in that war and the good, all the good men and women who died in that war. And it's nothing but a bunch of sob stories from the Jewish community. Really, the humanity should push back against these people. I don't know about you, but I'm fed up with it. And we know. These stories are full of, you know what, worse than the manure that comes from the cows that are roaming around the California fields right now. These people are garbage. To use emotional tugs and ploys against us for political, economic, spiritual, and intellectual gain is some of the most underhanded, disgusting, loathing behavior that we are dealing with today. And it is time we put a stop to it. Absolutely. And that's part of where one of these stories is coming from, because one of the stories is dealing with a bipartisan bill. A bipartisan bill simply means nowadays a Jewish-owned Congress. A Jewish-owned Congress equals a bipartisan bill. And it says reintroduced to elevate the status of a U.S. special envoy on anti-Semitism. We don't need a U.S. special envoy on anti-Semitism. We need a U.S. special envoy on Jewish hatred towards Western Europeans and Americans themselves. That's where we need to put this special envoy. We need to focus on the crimes of the Jewish community, the frauds of the Jewish community, the lies of the Jewish community, the absolute way in which they try to control our Congress and our government through buying up our government. These are the issues we need to focus on. We need to focus on the way in which Jewish communities like the SPLC, the ADL, and all of the... All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live. Happy New Year again. It's the first show of us for the year. Our guest, Alan Buttle, is standing by. Alan, just be patient for a second. I got a couple more rants to get to before I get to you. Simply, we had some technical issues to start the show here. But I just want to say two things real quick, guys. We had a great end of the year program. And what we've learned is that our archive account over at archive.org, which is our official archive for the show, that we put up everything, you know, for streaming, has been fudging our numbers. We noticed like a 68% drop in our numbers effective back in June, end of June. Well, this weekend, we had some really great programming, including our guests who's standing by. One of those was the Christmas Eve special with on the Graham Hart Show with Breiser. And that show went really, really well. And then what we did is we had like a Christmas party show, which we had a lot of guests from Michael Tom Goodrich, Frederick Blackburn showed up, Alan Buttle showed up, Parr Henriksen out of Sweden. I'm trying to name all of you. I hope I don't forget any. John Friend, Jan Lomprecht, co-hosted with by Graham Hart. I think Paul English, maybe. No, I don't think Paul was on that show. But we had a great little show there, guys. And, you know, the numbers shot up. They shot up really quick, you know. And then what we noticed was archive.org was throttling the numbers. First, it was like almost 500, went down to 425. Then it went down to 301. Then it went down to 138. Literally, these guys, these companies, these individuals that work in these major internet media operations, whether it's Google, Facebook, archive.org now, we know for a fact, Apple, you know, they are playing one of the most unethical, dirtiest games you can think of. They're dishonest, exceedingly unethical. They have shown no trust towards the people here, to the choices that the people make in listening. They are skewing information. They are altering, not so much altering the information, but they are skewing what is available to be seen by the public. We are dealing with a class of individual out there that is absolutely... Yes, you're just stand by, please. But we're dealing with a class of individual out there
Sorry, that is... Trouble with the internet.
Yeah, we're dealing with a class of individual folks that is completely unethical, amoral, and dishonest. And it is something that, you know, we're at a situation now where cheaters theoretically never win. And we have to make sure that these people who continue to alter our information or mislead people about what is happening within our networks, that they do not win. That is a critical thing moving forward. We are not going to get demoralized, even though it feels like it's a demoralization campaign out there. We know what we have over the years. We have not stumbled. We have not tumbled. In fact, with the growing situation in America and the West, we suspect we are doing just as well, if not better than ever. But we are not seeing that being reflected by these major Jewish-owned media operations. All right. Having said that, our guest, Mr. Alan Buttle, he is a researcher, and he has started up a new show called The Alan Buttle Show. You can actually catch it, for the most part, on grism.blogspot.com to get more information. He came recommended to us, so we're going to put him on the air here. And again, he's being featured over at Grism equally at the moment. And so we wanted to hear more about what Alan is all about. And I did meet Alan just a little bit on the Christmas Eve special show with Graham Hart and Breiser. And so, Alan, without further ado, welcome to Inside the Eye live from Riyadh in Saudi Arabia now.
Well, thank you very much, Dennis. It's a real pleasure to be on your show. And yeah, I'm just a normal guy who's dedicated my life to research, really. And I've been lucky enough to be able to dedicate a lot of time to that, and I'm just simply trying to broaden the broaden the discussion and introduce elements that most people don't ever hear about through the Jewish mainstream media, as you mentioned, like, for example, the Jewish domination over pretty much every aspect of our society. And seeing how that fits in with,
you know, sort of, it's funny, Alan, they'll call you and I an anti-Semite for even daring to say that. But there was just recently some type article posting came out of the Jerusalem Post that says, hey, we built America. We control its institutions. We control the financial system of America. And the fact that they only give us $3.8 billion isn't nearly enough. The Americans owe us more. And yet if we were to.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, can you imagine the chutzpah of these people?
Chutzpah is exactly the word, isn't it? They've got no shortage of this sort of arrogance, and actually they make life very easy for us, because in fact they declare everything openly and publicly. All the agendas they're getting up to, including of course mass immigration into the Western world and the white genocide, which is actually, explicitly stated by numerous Jewish, academics these people.
Abe Foxman himself even opened a call for the elimination of white people in general and in total. I mean, Abe Foxman, the head of the ADL, actually called for that. Now, why he was not arrested, tried and executed as an enemy of the American people, I don't know, quite frankly. Because to me, these types of statements are treasonous and should have been dealt with. Who's Alan Buttle?
Oh, sorry.
Real quick, because we don't know you, quite frankly. You seem like you're new on the scene. I don't know.
That's why
I'm here. You came to me highly recommended by a few people. We've noticed that you showed up over on, again, grism.blogspot.com, which is one of the major distribution networks now for this type of content. And how did you get into this type of research? How did you get into researching Western systems and the Jewish question?
Yeah, well, it's come about after a long, as I say, many, many years of research. And it's only relatively recently that I've really got my head around the Jewish sort of key to understanding what's going on in our society. And actually, the reason that I've been featured on the Grism page primarily is because I actually met Breiser at Alison Chablos' court trial, where I was there to support Alison. And, as of course, she ended up getting prosecuted for a breach of the Communications Act in the UK for writing songs that mocked the official story of the Holocaust. So I went there to support her, and we spent some time in the pub afterwards, and I met Brian, and he sort of we became in contact, sort of thing. And
okay,
and I was actually going to.
How did you hear about the Alison Chablot issue?
Because I was a keen follower of the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock show for quite a long time, and I had been following sort of Alison's trial, sort of thing. So decided to go along and support her, you know. And obviously by this point I was very aware of the Jewish issues, but that was my real introduction to Grism and these kind of things. But before that, I've been doing a lot of research myself, and I'd already made quite a few documentaries on various charities, so-called charities, and I made a documentary on Jeremy Corbyn as well, which showed him in a different light to how a lot of people would like British, to see him as a sort British, of man of the people.
Yeah, you're a British citizen.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, and then when you talk about the charities, I know oftentimes charities is used kind of like a misnomer in British politics, British political organization. They're not charities at all. They are basically NGOs being funded by Israel or some type of Jewish special interest group. This would be like the campaign against anti-Semitism, for instance. It's not a charity. There's nothing charitable about it. It's a political advocacy group that puts forward and advances a Jewish-only policy inside of the UK. So which charities were you doing research on and then releasing information about?
Yeah, charities like, for example, Amnesty International, which was started by actually a relative of the Rothschild family, who obviously from there on it was... it became one of the world's leading sort of so-called human rights charities. This was started up by a Jewish solicitor, very closely connected by blood to the Rothschild family. So I did some research on Amnesty and showed how their campaigns supported very well the war effort or the propaganda war effort with the American people, sort of to get into Iraq and other sort of war agendas that they had.
International has often been used as a fifth column element to push this idea of responsibility to protect. Oh, there's a genocide happening. You need to go to war now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they use all these fear. Kind of dramatic ways of presenting whatever information they have, but more often than not, it's found to be complete lies, and actually there's just a very clear, obvious agenda behind it all. And obviously, Amnesty International in recent years have got involved in the gay rights and feminism angles as well. So they've really branched out. But these are the kind of so-called charities that exist in the that are very prevalent in our mainstream media and our social media, and it'll often be the mainstream media that refers to other corrupt organizations like Amnesty International to justify their position on things like things like war and it's sort of you have Amnesty International pushing the sort of Western side, and then you have other kind of so-called charities and groups pushing the anti-imperialist and anti-Western agenda at the same time. So they sort of work in collaboration with each other, I find.
Yes, I agree with you on that. What other charities did you look at?
Amnesty
International really a charity?
I mean, they're technically a charity because they're registered as a charity, but they're not a charity at all.
Aren't they like a non-profit political organization advancing a political agenda?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And everything that they do can be understood very clearly if you understand the objectives of the global Jewish establishment, because everything fits in perfectly with what these goals are.
How much money does Amnesty International make? How much is their fund?
I can't remember exactly offhand, but we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars per year, sort of thing. They're not a small operation. No. And they've also had a lot of very important people working for them, including Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is one of the leading advisors to various U.S. presidents, and is very well connected to obviously the Rothschild family and Henry Kissinger, and he helped found the Trilateral Commission, I believe. So they've got very, very big names involved in Amnesty International. But yeah, most of these documentaries that I were making were before I became aware of the Jewish issue. So they sort of omit that element of it.
Which is still good to know how you developed anyways over time. Certainly I've given my development. So after this, like say Amnesty, just give us one other example of a documentary about some charity that you've done.
Yeah, I did a documentary on the WWF, for example, which was an interesting charity that had, the World Wildlife Fund.
World Wrestling Federation.
Oh, no, yeah, same initials. But they're probably not so apart from each other as you'd immediately think. But it's got very, very elite people involved at every stage of the World Wildlife Fund. And in fact, I find that this is another globalist organization to progress the global Jewish agenda. Like, for example, Julian Huxley was one of the founder members of the World Wildlife Fund. And he is, of course, highly implicated in all the sort of MK Ultra and secret society stuff. And his brother, of course, wrote Brave New World and obviously very, very well connected to the royal family as well, because Prince Philip, the Queen's husband, was involved from the very start of the World Wildlife Fund. And ironically, when he was the president of the World Wildlife Fund, he was out in India shooting tigers, because that's, of course, what you do if you're interested in looking after wildlife, isn't it? But it's a way they've used the charity to capture huge swathes of land and actually sort of sequester the land for, so-called conservation, which actually just more or less means that you take control of the land for your own purposes and refuse sort of local people the access to it. So it's been used for numerous different sort of political agendas, this organization, over the years. But to be honest, from the outside, we can see some of the things that they're doing, but we don't really know to what extent they're really operating and what their real what they're really getting up to behind the scenes. Because I think, for example, a lot of these so-called child protection charities are actually fronts for organized child trafficking and these kind of things, because obviously these kind of organizations have the greatest access to children. And we know that the elites are very into the child sex trade industry and these kind of things. So from analyzing, for example, the people involved in Save the Children International, it really seems to me that it's far more likely to be a front for a massive child trade, to be honest. And so I think a lot of these charities do the exact opposite of what they tell us they're actually doing.
And of course, as you've developed and you being a British citizen, are not so keen, theoretically anyways, would not have been so keen to the 9/11 fraud as we were in America. But the 9/11 fraud really turned your vision onto a specter of society that you never looked at before. And that would be then what we call the Jewish problem today. Would that be correct?
Yeah, eventually, yeah. Well, I think with 9/11, like I suppose a lot of people who just saw the pictures and couldn't believe that, you're not honestly expecting me to believe that these towers just collapse like that, are you? From these two planes making those three buildings collapse. So obviously, having come to that realization, for me, it was just a case of researching until some logical explanation can be made, because it raises so many questions. How on earth? Because we know that it didn't happen like they're telling us. So how did they manage to do it? Which groups were involved? Sort of why is it that You know, how is it even possible? How is it possible for all the media to lie, you know, in sync? How is it possible for the BBC to report the collapse of Building 7 before it even happened? And these kind of questions. And obviously that just, I wasn't satisfied until I discovered sort of, you know, there is a clear Jewish, you know, motive behind it. And, you know, and even... and we have all the people's names like Dov Zakheim Wolfowitz and lots of Jewish involvement within, because it's a mixture between Jews and Freemasons, isn't it, really, who control things. And I think through those organizations and you know, sort of, we can get to the bottom of most of the things that are going on, I believe.
From the 719 area code, hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Life.
Hi, Fetch. I can't listen live, so I'm not sure what you're talking about now, and I hope I don't interrupt. I just wanted to make a brief comment about why I got into white nationalism, and okay. I think I can offer some insight to that I think can really help our movement. And it comes down to the question of what was World War II about? They were teaching me as a young man that they're implying that they went to war so white people couldn't have their own nation. And I knew that was wrong. And so I got in, you know, with David Duke and David Irving and reading all the revisionist books. And all of this revisionist history that your guest last week, that's what I'm listening to now, Fetch, is your last week's show. Goodrich, all that stuff is very important to me. That is the goal, because it's with these lies they got us shackled, but it's just too big of a step for an activist. We cannot allow them to call us racists or Nazis. And the question comes down to what was World War II about? And Fetch, after college, I probably talked to 100 World War II vets, and none of them went to war anything about Jews, not the fascists, not that whatever that means, the brown shirts, nothing. We got attacked by Buddhists, for Christ's sake. World War II, from that generation's perspective, was to preserve nationalism from the multicultural Axis power, this global diverse alliance. And when they weaponized World War II history to only be about Jews and Nazis, that's how they weaponized it. And my point is, Fetch, I've always been wondering, why haven't we, I call them, they don't out me, I out them. You're a goddamn racist, rot Nazi. It's just like the Mexicans right now. It's the Mexi-Nazis are invading us for Liebestraum. We've got the same situation, a multicultural coalition invading Europe and invading the United States. And our movement is not calling them Nazis and racists. I'm just flabbergasted. And by letting this big cinch in our armor open, Fetch, they have labeled us un-American. And then we walk around talking revisionist history so many people can't handle that big bite. I know it's the goal, but we need steps in between, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And when we allow them to rewrite regular history and we get hung up on revisionist history, that Fetch, in many people's minds, we're not even on the playing field. We're un-American Nazis who deserve a bullet in our head. And I out them. I chase Democrats down the street calling them racist Nazi scum. They fold like a lawn chair. And I don't know, we can definitely call them racist and Nazis, because from a World War II perspective, if you want to take away somebody else's nation, you're a Nazi. It's just that simple. I don't know. You got any comments?
I'll leave that. Alan, how about you? You've been dealing with this issue a little bit. So what do you say to the caller? Your name, by the way, first name, please.
Dan.
Dan, what do you have to say to Dan about World War II was this? I believe he's probably right. It was sold as a nationalist idea to the American soldier. But I don't believe the American soldier was playing it on a nationalist field. He was working with really Jewish internationalism. I think he was just fighting what he believed, but that's not what he was being put to use for.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way, you know, the most soldiers are, you know, brought into wars, obviously, through their trust in their higher order, you know, as far as the West has been concerned, I think we've been controlled for a very, very long time. I mean, I've recently made a podcast about Hitler's connection to the international bankers, and I look at it in a more sort of, you know, scientific way to try and figure out a most likely explanation for what was going on, and sort of showing how Hitler had employed a an economics minister and a president of his Reichsbank to be one of the great friends of one of the great friends of Montagu Norman, the governor of the Bank of England, and a great friend of Benjamin Strong, who was the president of the Federal Reserve Bank in the 20s. And this Schacht guy was setting up political parties with Jews in the in Germany before he actually decided to switch to supporting Adolf Hitler. And so actually, I think this whole, I mean, personally, and obviously a lot of people within the movement that I associate with, which is obviously like white nationalist, white survivalist movement, I like to call it, because we are under threat of our survival. I actually think that being associated with Nazism actually weakens us a lot, because people immediately have that instinctive reaction about it because of all the lies they've been told about Nazis and the Holocaust and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, Dan, you can stay through the... We're going into break. Dan, if you want to stay through the break, welcome.
Sure.
It's The Fetch with Alan Buttle. Again, it's Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Back right now. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Today's date, January the 5th, 2019. Happy New Year, everybody. First show for yours truly, not the first show for the show. Of course, we had Paul English with Michael Tom Goodrich on for this past Thursday, the primetime show. Great show, by the way, everybody. Nah, I can't say everybody, but there was certainly a lot of good positive feedback on that. So thanks a lot for Paul English for filling in. Always welcome. Class guy, quite frankly. Of course, with Michael Tom Goodrich equally. Our guest right now, first, we want to put something out there to Dan, who is still standing on the line, I believe, from, I think, the 719 area code. If you cannot get to Inside the Eye Live on the internet, we do have a Listen Live number. It's part of the services we offer here. You want to call 1-America, of course, plus 1, then 605-468-4702. That's 1-605-468-4702. You know what's funny about those lines, guys, is you know who uses those lines a lot? Truckers. They'll be driving across the nation, and they will actually call in while they're driving and listen on their phones while they're going. So, again, you can hear the show at 1-605-468-4702. That's 1-605-468-4702. That is the listener listen-in line. And, of course, the listener call-in line is 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. Now, Dan, you were talking about something real quick, and we're going to get back down, of course, our guest. But you were talking about a great phrase you came up with, and that is a survivalist movement, a white survivalist movement. That's a great term. I think you should be commended on that.
I think it was your guest that came up with that.
Alan. Okay, Alan, I thought you'd... Sorry about that, Alan. That was a great comment then. Sorry about that, Alan. See?
Well, thanks.
Dan, I'm going to just turn the show over to you now, since you seem to have a better handle on this than I do today. And Alan, enjoy. No, just kidding.
I'll just sum up Alan, and hang up so you can go on. I don't even know the topic because I was listening to last week's show. But anyways... By allowing them, we're in the revisionist history, and as an activist, it didn't help me much at all. In fact, it dug me in a hole, and it actually allowed them to paint me as an un-American Nazi. And I've always been, they had a question, what was World War II about? And if we defend normie history instead of revisionist history, we have only got 15 more yards to go, guys. That's it. But as soon as we abandon and allow them to rewrite normie history, and they did, and they made it only about Nazis and Jews when it was about the Axis powers, the most multicultural global alliance ever. We were attacked by Buddhists and the Muslims were helping the Germans on. And it had nothing to do with Jews. And we need to defend first and foremost. And I, without any dishonesty, I have been doxing them as Nazis and racist, and they fold like a lawn chair. And I put on the mantle of the mindset, I mean, of World War II vets before television came along and rewrote it and weaponized it. We should all be calling them. What would happen, Fetch, if David Duke and Don Black would have started out their career, and they're the big dogs, and I proudly donate $10 a month to both of them, right? But if they would have been come out calling them our opponents Nazis and racists, my God, think where we would be. Think where we would be. We would be so close to victory. And we allowed them to make us feel like we're un-American and just detached from our elders. And because it's the same thing that World War II vets, a global multicultural alliance invading the neighbors, that's what they, World War II vets fought the Axis powers, and now it's the flip side, the parallels. It's low-hanging fruit. It's the easy thing. And I can't believe I'm the only activist out here that calls them racist and Nazis, and I don't feel dishonest at all. I don't feel like I'm stretching history. I'm defending what World War II vets were told they were fighting for. So, oh, by the way, Fetch, before I go,
yeah.
You used to have a player that I could click, right, on the website, and now it downloads. And I get this standard player that pops up, and I swear to God, I cannot get yours.
You know what? I'll tell you what. When I was traveling this Thursday, coming in from the airport, even I couldn't even connect to my own show. I had to actually go to TuneIn Radio. So, yes, I agree. We are lacking here. We need to improve on
that
this
issue. That player that you clicked on years ago. Oh, man, I listen to you every Saturday.
You know what? I noticed it because I actually tried to use it myself this Thursday, and it didn't work. And I'm like, oh, this is not very good. You don't have anything on the front page that works.
What's the topic about today, by the way? What are you guys talking about?
Basically, we have two guests. We have Alan Buttle from The Alan Buttle Show, basically talking about his work. And again, after this, you can at least go to 605-468-4702.
And I'm going to do it. I use that radio lines with Jeff Ranson all the time.
Well, we have ours also. We're fairly sophisticated at this network. 605-468-4702.
I'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right, everybody. Alan, I'm not sure I'm going to actually agree with everything that Dan there was saying, but we do have an issue now where we need to start going on the counteroffensive, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's lots of, holes in their arguments. And if we just, if we all believe in so-called equality and all this kind of thing, which obviously is nonsense, we as white people living in our own countries built by our own ancestors are treated like second-class citizens today by a Jewish elite with all the non-white immigrants and their children of these non-white immigrants that populate the Congress and obviously my the political positions in my country of the UK. Like, so we are being kind of we are being displaced. We're being displaced politically. We're being displaced geographically because so much immigration has happened, especially in the cities that there really aren't many white British people left in the cities in the UK. They're all sort of moving out to the countryside and just generally getting replaced. And so we are facing this sort of, assault on us from every conceivable direction. I think with the, because a really easy thing, because they've built up this sort of cult of Nazi hating throughout the world. I think a main weakness with us is if we do claim to agree with what Hitler was about and things like this, it puts us in a very weak position. And I actually think that, I was looking into works like Gerald Manuhin. He wrote a book called Tell the Truth and Shame the Devil, which is a book which really, and he's a Jew and he's from a very elitist Jewish family. And there he wrote a book called Tell the Truth and Shame the Devil, basically adoring Adolf Hitler and telling his audience that he was a great man and he was trying to fight the global Jewish establishment, basically. And but this Gerald Manuhin character is very interesting because his father set up a foundation, like a charitable foundation, which Gerald Manuhin actually ran for a short time, and in which this foundation was very active in refugee rights, immigrant rights and all this kind of thing. So it was from a very, very different sort of Jewish angle, and just understanding the history, you know, how financially bankrupt Germany was after the First World War, and the Treaty of Versailles that left Germany in a terrible financial state, and then bearing in mind the help of people like Hjalmar Schacht to get Hitler into power, we're supposed to believe that the post World War One Germany was somehow not completely dominated by Jews, not dominated enough to prevent a very strong movement from occurring organically against Jews. And I question this. I find it extremely unlikely. And then when adding together some other sort of facts about the financial connections, I find it even less likely that Hitler was a genuine advocate of white survival, rather than being another one of their agents. But, you know, I'm happy to be proved wrong on that, but I just see it as extremely unlikely.
Okay, the problem I have with your side, Alan, with this angle, is basically you're saying to everybody out there is Jews have a stranglehold on everything, and there's absolutely no chance of any defense against this. They were so smart. They're so smart. They actually were taking the most advanced European nation, Germany, and controlled it to its absolute demise, and control it up to 2099 still.
Yeah, so, basically is apart from the preface to that comment, which was that we've got no chance. I think we've got no chance.
So where's your chance if you cannot form a national type of underpinning like a national socialist movement, which was anti-Jewish and clearly did have an open warfare against Jewish elites?
It professed to be anti-Jewish. Yes, I agree that it's supposed to be. But sort of whether or not it actually was is another question, and that's a question of science, not just a question of there's a factual answer to
okay
that.
So basically if you take a society and they legally basically force Jews out of the professions like they did in National Socialist Germany, is that pro-Jewish?
It depends where it's leading, doesn't it? And that's the thing. Like, the Jewish establishment don't make only very short-term plans, do they? Like, let's face it, they plan things very, very many years in advance. There's some evidence to suggest that the State of Israel was planned over 100 years in advance, and it fell on the exact year that it was predicted. I think a guy called Christopher John Bjerknes pointed out some evidence to that effect. So I don't believe in the very short term. You know, as far as it might appear, Germany was anti-Jewish throughout Hitler's reign. But I think it can be completely possible that they wanted to build this country up and then destroy it. And by destroying it, actually destroy all criticism of Jews, and instead of the European people seeing Jews as a problem, they now see Jews as the victims of this monstrous so-called Holocaust. And so long term, the Nazi Party was really crucial to Israel guaranteeing the State of Israel, and also the United Nations and the European Union was formed shortly afterwards as well. I'm sure you'll have heard of Coudenhove Kalergi, Count Coudenhove Kalergi. Well, he actually invited Hjalmar Schacht, Hitler's president of his Reichsbank and economics minister. He invited him to his first Pan-Europa conference. And Hjalmar Schacht actually declared that Hitler was going to be the person to unite Europe. And obviously, Coudenhove Kalergi was directly funded by Max Warburg, and for the purposes of this movement, which is as Jewish as movements come, and I think so. There's just quite a lot of evidence that doesn't quite add up if we're going to believe that it was a movement for us, and I think that actually I don't think we're hopeless, and I don't think that just because we don't believe the official Hitler narrative that he was against the Jews, I don't think we're hopeless because we don't believe that. I think actually we'd get an enormous amount of power if we unified and understood that the entire war was set up by Jews, and that this huge disgraceful slaughter was set up by Jews in its entirety from both sides. I think that would actually be far more uniting than our than half of our movement adoring Hitler and the other half not, sort of thing. But anyway, that's sort of beside the point, really. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that there's lots of evidence that doesn't quite add up if we're gonna believe that Hitler's one of ours.
Okay, from North Carolina, Frank, welcome to Inside the Eye Live, man. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year, Fritch. I apologize to the listeners for calling and interrupting.
No, don't worry, man.
It's conversation.
But it's Inside the Eye Live. Open phone.
Yeah, I did have a couple questions I wanted to run by you guys, as long as you were both there together, and I'm not familiar with your guests. I also am a pessimist, by the way, Fetch. I don't like to talk about it a lot because I don't want to bring others down, but I pretty much saw, like, 20 years ago, this was over, the fight was over, even before I knew about the Jews. I could just see the way things were going, and I see the main problem of our people that you would think would be on our side, is they're delusional. You know, they're not in their right mind. They've had this spell cast over them, and they're not in their right mind. They're not looking out for their own interest, and they've just been fed all this propaganda, this unicorn, fluffy, you know, love kumbaya stuff, and they just don't understand the nature of the real world and survival. You know, as long as you guys are there, I wanted to, you know, I listened to Deanna Smigola some over the years and some of her guests, and, you know, there were some things that really caught me off guard. Like, you know, I've heard that actually a lot of Jews were allowed to continue living their lives normally.
300,000.
Even in Berlin.
300,000 plus. Yeah, 300,000 plus. It wasn't like it was a targeted campaign. So 300,000 Jews were still managed and lived quite well under National Socialist Germany.
Right. Okay. And a lot of them served in the military. A lot of Jews served in the military. Correct. And I always wondered, could that have been part of the problem as far as sabotage? Because we know the Allies pretty much knew what the Germans were going to do before they did it. You know, they broke certain codes and stuff like that.
Mm. One has to wonder, obviously pure speculation, conjecture.
Well, maybe Hitler didn't distrust the Jews as much as he was professing to, you know, it's inconsistent with what he was supposed to be about, to allow 300,000 Jews to live normal lives in Germany at the time, surely. I would suggest this is more evidence to my assessment of the Hitler's actually one of theirs. But, you know, we have to take all these pieces of evidence and try and put together a logical picture, I think.
I would have to agree with you, at least on the surface level, at first glance. I would have to agree with your statement that you just made, because I was going to start a group and say I was able to get maybe, 100,000 people in it. And I, you know, had allowed Jews to, you know, be members of the group, and this was like a resistance or something, pro-American, pro-freedom, pro-everything constitution, and I were to have allowed, say 10% Jews or 5% or whatever, based on what I know of the Jew, I would say that organization and its mission were pretty much dead in the water. They weren't going to get anywhere, because those Jews were going to infiltrate all the key areas where they needed to be and sabotage it and neutralize it.
Yeah. And actually, Jews had already declared war on Germany many years before. I think was it 1931 that there was an international Jewish boycott of Germany?
1933.
33 was it. I apologize. Yeah.
So, Frank, anything else real quick?
Well, I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, as long as you got the guests on there, like I just said, I'm very pessimistic. And I know that things happen. Sometimes things happen in history, you know, and they and things take a course that you wouldn't expect, and you've got this phenomenon where the pendulum swings, in history from one extreme to the other. But it just seems like our people are just a bunch of really soft, go along to get along people now, and are just willing to hand over their whole heritage, everything that Western civilization has brought to the world. It seems like they're just willing to just readily just hand it over now. It's like they've been put under a spell.
I think they have. Anyway, they really have been put under a spell. They've had many years of comfort and relative, easy living. Many years of peace at home, sort of thing, and many years of being able to devote their lives to sort of trivialities and obviously there's been an ongoing effort to destroy our communities, to damage our family units and all this kind of thing, which has led to the pretty ropey state of our society today, to say the least.
Okay, Frank, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Alan, I have a question for you now. Where do you stand on really the discussion? Because when you talk about what Frank's talking about, it's really, for me, it would be how societies deal with two issues. And it's something that I know Frederick Blackburn and I had discussed some time ago. And that is the difference between the Jewish problem and the Jewish question. And, of course, the Jewish question is, what do we do with our Jews once we have determined that they are a problem? Now, what I have put forward is that Jews have solved that question, because the Jewish question was always about what do we do with those Jews. Now the Jewish question has been solved. They have risen to such a level of power that we can't do anything. They basically have checked. They've checked us for now. We're not checkmated, although a lot of people feel that certainly a checkmate is coming. But we are not and no longer in a position to do anything, even though we know of the problem. Where do you stand on this type of idea?
Well, I mean, that we are still able to communicate like this and get our message out about the Jewish domination of our world publicly indicates that they haven't quite got the control that they really want just yet, even though they control almost everything, sort of all official instruments sort of thing. But I don't know. I don't really like to focus on any solutions just yet, because I think the only thing to really focus on is getting information out to people at the moment, because our people are, very, very dumbed down and very, they're just not really there yet. We're not ready to create a movement. We're not ready to sort of start creating solutions, because we don't have that foundation of an understanding of what's really going on, I think. So that's where my focus lies. I'm sure there can be peaceful solutions. They obviously have their state now as well. And, I don't know, but.
Actually, Alan, we are coming up on the end of the segment. Why don't you let people know how they can reach out to you, listen to your show, get your information?
Yeah, well, my podcast goes out on Grism, Mammy's page, which is, Grism does my show is called Alan Buttle Radio Show, and I haven't actually made an episode today, but normally I make episodes every Saturday, and I've done I'm up to hour number 11 on that now, and I've covered a variety of issues, including Jeremy Corbyn, the House of Assad, the Russia-Israel relationship, Hitler's banking, and a variety of things. So please go and check out my work, and there's an email address as well that you can contact me privately that you can find on my page. Thank you very much, Dennis, and it'd be nice chatting to you.
Equally, we'll talk to you soon, and have a great new year, and hope things go well on your side.
Thank you very much. Happy New Year.
That's bye-bye. Alan Buttle, everybody. Again, Alan Buttle, he's got a new show, The Alan Buttle Show, and again, you can catch it every week on grism.blogspot.com. 305 area code, hang through. We're going to be coming back right after this. Everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at revolution.radio. I want to thank Alan Buttle for coming on. We had a slew of phone calls come in over the break, and we're going to try to blow those, get through that real quick. We got Monica Schaefer should be standing by. She's not on connected yet, but first let's go to the 207 area code. Hi, welcome to Inside the Live.
Hello, Dennis.
Yes.
Dennis, this is Frank Goodale, Frank G from Maine.
Oh, how
and,
are you?
Hello. Good, thank
Frank
you.
Says, Frank,
good, thank you. Nice talking with you.
Frank, I just want to say Frank is one of our financial backers. So, Frank, thanks so much for calling in. Welcome to Inside the Eye Live. I heard you got a big story with the Somalia community there up in Maine, man.
Yes, yes. We're getting more all the time. Thousands coming in, primarily sub-Saharans, but also, you know, others from the Middle East and so on, but primarily sub-Saharan from the, you know, Congo area and so on. Mm-hmm. One of the things I wanted to quickly say, though, was that as far as the National Socialist and Hitler controversy, there's a great book by Otto Strasser, S-T-R-A-S-S-E-R, Otto, called Hitler and I. That's on the Metzger site, resist.com. And it talks about Hitler's disappearance during the time that you know, the Germans were fighting against the Reds, and then his meteoric rise to power, and he had to invade Russia because he was preempting Stalin's attack. But apparently, you know, Strasser says that he made some mistakes and that he didn't. Excuse me, I got some laryngitis here. He mistreated some of the Slavs who would have fought with the Wehrmacht and would have helped Germany to, you know, overcome their battle in Russia. But anyway, I just wanted to put in a pitch for that Otto Strasser book, Hitler and I. He was the main leader of the National Socialist Party, and he was in a life and death struggle with Hitler. There's nothing, what I'm saying is there's nothing wrong per se with the National Socialist. It's just that I think Hitler was a little bit compromised, unfortunately.
It's all clouded history, but we got to find our way today, don't we?
Yes, we do.
And so
but that's
look for some motivation.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's just, that's just a little bit to hopefully, you know, clarify the murky story there. I can't really, you know, succinctly give a abstract of the whole story, but I would, you know, suggest reading that Otto Strasser book, Hitler and I. It's really an eye-opener.
And it's available at resist.com/onlinebooks/
mm-hmm.
And I,
Otto Strasser,
Hitler and I, Hitler and I,
yeah.
Words, -strasser.pdf. So it's apparently available for free online. Again, resist.com/onlinebooks/Hitler and I-strasser.pdf. So check that out. Frank, so much. Thanks so much, man. Stay in touch.
What an honor. Thank you so much. I can't really express how much I appreciate the work that you're doing. You're fantastic.
Thanks so much for
being
on your side too, and we appreciate your personal sponsorship of the show equally.
You're more than welcome,
guys, and we appreciate the private sponsorships we get also. And I consider them sponsorships, not donations. You're sponsoring the show, so you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. That's Frank, everybody. He sends me lots of cool emails about the Somalian and, as he now says, sub-Saharan invasion of the beautiful state of Maine, one of my most childhood fairy tale fantasy lands. I used to love that type of place. So now joining us, I'm pretty sure, is none other than Monica Schaefer. Again, you might recall Monica Schaefer spent about 10 months in prison in Germany for doing literally a video apologizing to her mother. And today marks the anniversary that she was actually entered the main prison where she stayed for 10 months. And she is here to tell her story to start the new year. And she's just a delightful lady. And we think you're going to enjoy the next hour. So sit back, relax. The chat room's open inside the iLive.com. Click on the live chat button if you want to call in. Again, 323-275-1314. And Monica, hi, welcome to Inside the iLive.
Hello, Dennis. Thank you so much for having me on. This is just a delight. It was really great to talk to you a few days ago, very informally. And yeah, that's how this came about. And today is indeed the anniversary of the first full day at the Stadelheim, the women's wing of the Stadelheim prison in München or Munich. I was, of course, arrested on January 3rd, but first they shuffle you around here and there. And that was quite an adventure, or people might call it misadventure. But anyway, there are stories to tell. Where does one begin? My goodness.
Well, I'll tell you what. For those who just don't know, because we do have a fairly large audience and new people come all the time, just let people know why it was you were actually arrested.
Right. Okay. So in June of 2016, I made a little video of apology to my mother, who is deceased. Both parents are gone. But I started feeling really badly about reproaches that I made against my parents when I was a teenager, when we were learning all these things in school about the horrors of the Germans and the Nazis and World War II, all the propaganda, all the things that now I know are lies that we learned about those death camps as we learned about it then. And I come from German parents, immigrants to Canada. I grew up in Canada. And, you know, this is what we're learning in school. So I'm kind of horrified by that. And I'm saying, gee, why didn't you do something to stop all those horrors? You know, you could have organized with your family and friends and done something to stop all that horrible stuff from going on. And, you know, my mother just quietly and solemnly, softly said to me, Monica, we just didn't know about those things. We didn't know about the death camps. We didn't know that was happening. And then, you know, fast forward many, many years later, as I started to wake up about events as they really are happening. And that awakening for me started with figuring out 9/11, 10 years after 9/11 happened. So about 2011, I started to peel the layers off my eyes. And of course, after I figured out 9/11, I started looking into things that happened before 9/11 and figured out that lying was not invented just then in 2001. So that's when I started to remember those reproaches that I made to my parents, and I felt really badly about it. Now I couldn't talk with them anymore because they're no longer with us. And then, my brother and I, we were together in June of 2016. I went over to visit him, and he has all this nice video making equipment. And I'll just mention here that Alfred, my brother, he is currently in jail, facing more charges, by the way, at the end of this month for things that he said in the trial that we both went through together. So, yeah, just to bring it forward here, January 3rd of 2018, I was on another visit to Germany, and we had attended the speech crime trial of Sylvia Stolz, also has spent years in prison a while back because she was Ernst Zündel's attorney. Ernst Zündel had spent years in jail for so-called Holocaust denial. And she was his attorney and did her job too well. This was probably about 10 years ago, I think, where the judge even was admonishing her, stop, you're breaking the law just by saying these things, or you can't bring that evidence. Anyway, she did not stop talking. This was right in court. They actually physically hauled her off, and then she ended up spending over 3 years in jail herself. Now, that was back then, after she got out, as political prisoners are want to do. She carried on with this very important work of truth-telling, and she had given a speech in, I believe it was in Switzerland, and in this speech, it was about freedom of speech, and she actually didn't say the word Holocaust once in that speech, is my understanding of it anyway. But when she got back to Germany, they recharged her for that speech. They can say, oh, it's in the context, you're still denying the Holocaust. Anyway, their crazy law in Germany, paragraph 130, it doesn't even have the word Holocaust in it, but it is clearly the law to prevent people from actually looking at the truth about what took place or did not take place in World War II, surrounding all these myths and fables of this so-called Holocaust. So she has been battling that court, that those charges ever since. And we simply attended the trial on January 3rd, 2018 as observers. Now,
Monica, I want to just kind of speed this up a bit. Just change the flow of flavor a little bit. Ready?
Yes.
What did you actually feel like when you saw the gendarmerie, the bailiffs or whatever, approach you to arrest you while you're sitting in the courtroom?
Oh, my goodness. It was surreal. Yeah, they did a very snappy recess, very unexpected.
What did you feel like? What did you
feel? Yeah, what I felt.
Saw that happen?
It was surreal. I didn't feel like I was in the, it felt like I was in another body or just another world. It was very strange. I protested. I said, hey, I'm a free person. I'm a Canadian. I'm not doing anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. Who are you? Like, where's your authority? Anyway, they basically hauled me off. I mean, they handcuffed me. I didn't have a choice in the matter.
Now, normally, Monica, when these types of things happen, normally, your consulate gets involved. They say, hey, why are you holding her? What did your consulate do for you?
Well, at that moment, they weren't present. And
of course
not.
What did they end up doing for you?
Yeah, about 2.5 weeks later, after I was in prison, and really those first 2.5 weeks with zero contact with the outside world, zero anything, I felt like I had dropped into this deep, dark cave. And really, it was absolutely something I'll never forget. Time slowed down incredibly. I mean, each minute, each hour, each day seemed like an eternity, and I had no idea what was happening in the outside world. It honestly felt like I was in this hole. Now, about 2.5 weeks after the arrest, the consulate did come to visit me. So they do have a consulate in Munich. And they came, and I didn't even know who was coming. The guards, they just said, okay, you're going downstairs today, somebody's here. And I assumed it might be the lawyer, my lawyer. And it was suddenly the consulate. So somebody who is now speaking English to me, and I was extremely surprised. Now, they made it very clear to me that they are not there to defend me, like to be sort of coming up against the laws of the land. They couldn't do that, but they were there to see that I was okay, like physically okay, that I wasn't being starved or tortured or anything like that. So anyway, that was actually quite a relief to me to meet them. But I also, at the same time, didn't really trust them, because I knew that my government was not going to be on my side. The government was all part and parcel of the enemy forces who were basically doing all these things to us. That, and I had had some experiences in the previous year and a half to tell me that was so, that none of our elected representatives are actually able to really represent us. They are all puppets. They are being controlled by the hidden government. So I knew that already. So I had this deep sense of distrust of them. However, they did turn out to be quite friendly. And yes, they really made it clear they couldn't defend me. You know, they couldn't do anything about the laws, but that they wanted to make sure I was physically okay, and that they could also be in touch with people that, you know, like family members, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, Monica, but Germany is one of those countries that the United States has warnings against Americans actually visiting. China was just placed on this list, but Germany's actually been on a list of warning to American citizens to be careful visiting, because you can be detained without having any real reason why, based on what you might think is possible. So yeah, Germany's always been known to us to be an actual dangerous place for Americans to visit. Don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that. That's just incredible.
It's actually on a warning list of American citizens to be careful while traveling Germany, because you can actually be blocked from exiting. And China just got put on it, but Germany's been on that list for quite some time.
That is so interesting. And so it should be on that list. You know, it obviously was dangerous for me to travel there. And I did not know. They didn't send me a letter back in 2016 telling me, "Dear Mrs. Schaefer, you should be careful about traveling to our country because we have a file open on you." And they did indeed have a file open on me since days after the video, because I happen to have relatives who are dear, loving people. However, they are completely a product of the re-education program a la George Orwell in Germany. They are good people, but they are completely misguided and miseducated. You know, this re-education, I put that in quotation marks. Of course, your listeners can't see that. But they think they're doing good. And they reported Alfred and me to the authorities back in 2016. So, you know, these, you could say, are they betrayed us. They would be like in the days of old when witches were being burned at the stake. They might be the first to light the fire under our feet and thinking they're doing good. You see, that is what is so crazy about all this. It's the psychological warfare that we have been subjected to. You know, the war never ended just because the bombs stopped dropping. The war carried on. In fact, it accelerated. And I would say that psychological warfare is worse. It's the worst kind, because the people themselves become agents of their own destruction, which is exactly what's written in the protocols of the Elders of Zion. So yeah, that's how that was.
Now, so you're in jail for 2 weeks. You finally get your consular visit, which is normally done. 2 weeks is a fairly rational time to motivate the sources to get it to you, unless you're a high-level political prisoner, if you know what I mean. But someone like us, 2 weeks would be pretty good. How long did it take for you to actually meet with the lawyer and start to plot how the heck you're going to get out of this mess?
Okay, the lawyer who was representing Sylvia Stolz, Wolfram Nahrat, he was present when I got arrested. When I was down in the dungeon of the courtroom in the holding cell for about 6 or 7 hours, during that time, he was able to come down and see me for about 2 minutes, literally. It was just this very, very brief encounter, but he assured me that if I wanted, he could help me, and that he would be present the next day when I went before the judge for a hearing, for them to decide what they're doing with me. You see, so they can arrest somebody, but then they have to decide within short order and make a formal declaration of why they're actually holding you. Because, of course, at this point, no charges are laid. There's not been a trial. Nothing has happened. They're just going to be holding me. So, indeed, he came the next day when I was brought back to the courthouse. Because that night I was brought out to a prison cell in another town outside of Munich, held there. I mean, those hours just crept by so slowly. That's a whole, it's like a lifetime went on in those 24 hours. And then I was brought before the judge. So that lawyer, he was there the next day, and he ended up becoming my lawyer. for the trial, which started 6 months later. And so, but as far as I didn't have tons of contact with him during those 6 months, but I did have, you know, written contact and the occasional visit from him. But that didn't really get going until a little bit later in the jail. Like that first month or two in jail, it really seemed like an eternity. Time crept by extremely slowly. And I could talk about the expansion and shrinkage of time. It was the most interesting experience I've ever had. And, you know, you think time ticks along steadily because we have clocks and we have calendars and they are extremely steady. But in terms of our perception of time, my goodness, that's a whole nother story, because as the months went by, time sped up for me. It became actually frightening how quickly time started going by after a while. I didn't want to wish my life away. And the other thing about it is, here I was a prisoner for nearly 10 full months, and yet I never knew until the hour of my release that what would happen, like when I would be released. Most times when people are in jail, they know their end date. They have their sentence. They know when they're coming out. So they actually would be happy about time speeding up in jail. But for me, I did not know how long I would be there, when I was coming out, until the hour of my release. That's when I knew that I was being released on time served immediately. And I can tell you that was also quite a traumatic experience. That might sound strange for listeners, but the spitting me out just as suddenly as they swallowed me up, that was not the easiest thing to experience. It that had its own challenges, let me tell you. Okay. But
so we're going to be going into a break maybe in about a minute and a half. So before we get into any more heavy, deep stories, we'll just kind of go off. How's Canada right now? How you Canada? How are things at home?
Yeah, things are actually just great right now. Things are fine. When I first got back to my hometown, it felt not that great. It felt somewhat hostile. There's a great deal of groupthink in my hometown. But I have to say, over these past weeks, and now it's been 2 months that I've been back home, I'm feeling a lot better. I'm feeling a lot more secure here. And there are a lot of people who are being very friendly to me and have welcomed me back home. And they may not know what the issues are about, and they may not understand the issues, but a lot of people have given me very warm hugs back home, saying, we're happy that you're back.
Monica Schaefer, everybody, back with more right after this. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye live again, January the 5th, man, 2019. Boy, has time been flying by. Started this show, what, 2011? We're 2019. That's all pretty good stuff. You know, Monica Schaefer is joining us. She's in Canada. She is a political prisoner at one point of the German Talmudic court systems regarding their basically protection of a fake history. Monica, what they're doing out there is in the chat room, you're a violinist, correct?
Yes, I do play the violin. That's right.
Play the violin. And of course, as you know, they had an orchestra inside Auschwitz. It was kind of a famous orchestra. And when Jewesses who played in that were asked why we had an orchestra at Auschwitz, they said, oh, we were just slaves. And the Germans would have to play for the Germans while they ate their feasts. And if we missed a note, they would shoot us. Pretty tough place to play, huh?
Oh, the stories they come up with, you know. Yeah.
The sad part is you told us, you know, as we all know too, but you've mentioned this, the truth is no defense in a German court. How absurd is that, isn't it?
It is so bizarre. And let me just tell you something else. And your word Talmudic court system, that says it really does. Now, in the German court system, if you are a political prisoner, in other words, you are there simply for words that you have spoken. Well, if you try to explain to them how you reached your conclusions, or if you try to bring forth evidence that is going to support your conclusions in the German court of law, well, guess what? You are reoffending offending. You are making new crime. I mean, how bizarre does it get? So this just goes around and around and around in a circle. You could make the crime because you said something that they do not allow you to say. Then you go to court for it. Then in court, you're supposed to be able to defend yourself. So you explain it. Oh, you've just done a new crime. We're going to make a new court date for you. And guess what? That is exactly what they're doing to Alfred, my brother. He's going back to court January 28th, facing new charges for things that he said in court in our trial, which went from July till October of this past year.
Yeah, we got a quick call coming in. 516 area code. Hi, welcome. You're on the line with Monica Schaefer.
Hey, why don't you get the Jewish webmaster of Daily Stormer on?
Okay. So basically, then, Monica, you can't even defend yourself in court. You know, you can't defend yourself. Are you concerned at all now that you've got personal experience about what's going on in the court systems because you've been through it? Are you concerned at all about the use of weaponizing the term anti-Semitism to create anti-speech precedents?
Well, that term anti-Semitism, I mean, that has been their tool, their trick, their weapon to shut down any rational thought and talk and just any criticism of Israel, any criticism of what Jews are actually doing. So if you point out facts of what they're doing, they just call it, oh, anti-Semitism. But, you know, I think that that word is losing its power, is losing its strength. But there, it's being replaced by other weaponized words, like these words just keep on piling up on top of each other. I think the newest, worst word, weaponized word, is racist, you know, racism. Like, any critique of the current agenda to flood our lands with people from all over the world is now, you know, the new word is racist. So all these weaponized words, that's part of the psychological warfare. Alfred talks very well about all those things. It, you know, he talks about how it compartmentalizes our brains. It causes us to not be able to think clearly and see clearly anymore. I think I might have lost you. Are you still there? Hello.
Okay. Sorry about that, Monica. We lost you about 30 seconds ago. I think we reconnected with the studio.
Yes, I can hear you now. I realized we had lost each other. Okay.
Yeah, we were talking about basically the racism, and it's a weaponized word. We deal a lot with that already on the show, so we can skip that part. But yeah, we certainly get that. But, you know, the question I have for you now, and we kind of joked about it, but it's the food. The food and inside the courts or not inside the courts.
You know, I think our connection has
gone. You actually
back.
Said, you know, all in all, the food was pretty good. Wasn't quite hotel food, but it wasn't.
Dennis, I think the connection has gone sour. Do you still hear me? Yeah, I think we've lost each other again. Somebody might be interfering with our connection here.
Okay, Monica, are you back?
Yeah, your voice is kind of getting all warped, but I'm back now. Can you hear me clearly? And I can go ahead.
You're actually coming through fantastic.
Okay, I think you talked about the food. You want me to tell you about the food?
Yeah, talk about the food. Well, I debug everything.
Okay, yeah. Actually, you know, there were a lot of prisoners who would just complain incessantly about the food, but I didn't subscribe to that that sort of let's just complain about everything here, because sometimes the food was okay. Sometimes it was actually pretty decent. And, you know, I did after a while learn and figure out how to make it so that I was eating very healthy and very well. Now, with a bit of extra money, and I had some money in my account there, and thank you very much to people who donated. People would send 5 or 10 euros in letters, and that was just fantastic because that would go into my account. And twice a month, we could shop from a list. It's not like you go into a store, but you'd have a list, and then you fill out a form and put the product numbers on there, and then a few days later, twice a month, that would happen, that you got your box of goodies. And so I would buy extra fruit and vegetables and healthy things and supplement the prison food. And then on days where we actually got good stuff, I would get extra. Like, they did not starve us. There was plenty of food. In fact, you had to learn to be okay with throwing food out into the Schweineeimer, as they call it, the pig bucket or the compost bucket. So, you'd keep extra. And we did have a little box in a refrigerator that could be locked, but not in our cells. So in the limited time in the afternoon that the cell doors were open and we had access to the hallway in our wing, we'd organize our food for the next 21 hours or whatever until the cell doors would open again the next morning for the courtyard walk. And so on days where there was something good, I would get extra and put it in containers and put it in my little refrigerated box and just supplement my food that way. And I always had ginger. I'd learned to eat fresh ginger and start my morning with a big, little bit of a squeeze of lemon in water. And I kept healthy. I was really proud and happy about that I was able to avoid all these sicknesses that were going on around me all the time. So yeah. Food was okay, and I not made it
like,
work.
It's not like the Eisenhower death camps.
Oh, my goodness. Talking about the Eisenhower death camps, and my father was in there, and he escaped miraculously, I would say. There was a prison guard who somehow saw some value in my father and took a liking to him, and he helped him escape in the trunk of his car. This was just an incredible story. So otherwise I wouldn't be talking to you now, but he said that between a third and a quarter of the people around him in those camps were dying where he was at, and they were using their spoons to dig holes in the dirt to get out of the cold and the elements. And he said people would come in healthy and strong, and within days they were sick and not able to even crawl, and then dying. And then these trucks would come by and pick up all these dead bodies. I mean, that was horrible. That was a deliberate starvation plan. This was after the hostilities ended.
Yeah. Vera from Canada. Hi, you're on with Monica Schaefer.
Hi, Monica. We've never talked to each other. I just wanted to wish you a happy new year, and I'm so happy that you're out. And I wanted to know now, where do you live? Where are you living now?
Well, I don't think it's a secret, so I'll just say it. I'm in Jasper. So, that's where I am. And thank you so much for your good wishes. Thank you.
Jasper is basically, I heard that the road in Jasper in the wintertime is not even maintained.
Well, actually, the Highway 90 shut down for a few days all over. I've been out shoveling like twice a day, basically. That's good.
Keep you in shape.
Indeed, it's great exercise. I don't mind shoveling one bit, and I was shoveling for a friend as well while she was gone on holidays, so it kept me busy hopping between my place and her place. And yeah, but the road, I mean, they do get maintained, but the one between here and Banff is sort of a lower priority, so it does shut down sometimes in winter.
Yeah, because I know my son went on it, and he said it was such a nightmare that he couldn't believe it. He was just sliding this way, sliding that way, and it even said, this road is not maintained. You know, I'm not sure if this was, I think last year, maybe the year before. Anyways, I just want to wish the best wishes to you for this year, and I hope your brother doesn't get a lot of time. And thank you for all that you've done, you know, like just for coming forward and speaking up about your plight, because people haven't got a clue. There's some people that are still so dumb because they hear it over and over, the Jewish lie, and they're like, we know that they are going to fall, for sure. I have no doubt in my mind, just the sooner the better, because they're making everybody suffer in the process. Anybody that's really paying attention, why would they throw them in jail for saying anything? Just simply speaking something.
Yeah, you know, you hit it on the head there with why do they have to put people in jail for speaking? Obviously, if we were just speaking lies, they could use argument and evidence to counter our speech. But the truth, there's nothing left for them to do but to enforce silence, and they make these laws. Like I always say, truth stands on its own. It stands on its own. So, yeah, that's really great what you're saying. But also, I just want to say, you know, I was asleep until just a few years ago. So it's nothing to be ashamed of for people out there who are just starting to figure it out and learn. It's nothing to be ashamed of. We've been subjected to all this, these lies all our lives. It's like a drip feed, slow drip feed of toxic lies coming into our bloodstream.
I'm 60, and I believed it up until just a few years ago. I mean, after starting to listen to Fetch and catching on of all the crime and everything, you know, and then Hailstorm was, I don't know if you've listened to it, you most likely have, that
yes,
like certainly shows the other side. But they've made a business out of this Holocaust lie. So it's a business for them now, because that's how they get money and sympathy.
Yes, and not only is it big business, it has structured the world as it is. Plus, it's used as a bludgeon against anybody who criticizes the current agenda of flooding our lands, and basically the agenda of doing away with us, the white people, yeah, the people of European ancestry. And so then right away they bring out the Holocaust myth and story and say, whoa, you know, that's racist and that's going to bring about the next Holocaust. Well, while the whole thing is based on a myth and lies.
Actually, it's all based on Holocausting the one target demographic. So they're trying to immobilize everybody so that they are basically frozen and they don't react to their own self-interest. That's really what's happening here with that whole thing. Vera, anything else quick, and then we want to move on?
No, that's basically it. I had one more thing, but I can't think of it right now. So happy New Year to you again, Monica.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, we have we've picked up, Monica, some people from Germany that listen to the show, obviously. France has started to pick up a little bit. And what they've told me, and I've seen it in the chat room actually today even, once you witness this level of show trial environment, you really realize that you are living in a nightmare, aren't you?
Yes. I think that just the fact of the imprisonment of people who are disagreeing with the officially sanctioned story, that alone has done a lot to wake people up. So you could say, how stupid of them to have imprisoned us. That's really a stupid thing to do, because they've just served to awaken more people to the falsehood of their narrative, haven't they? So anyway, that's how I feel. And I haven't been shoved off into a corner and silenced, no way. And Alfred, he's in good spirits, and he's not going to be real quick,
Alfred, you know, he was on my show, I think back in June, and we found him to be quite audacious in how he was structuring his rhetoric. And we were questioning, quite honestly, why he was going about in the way that he was. I mean, again, we've been doing this all. We're all professionals at this type of rhetorical discussion. And we did have questions about what he was. What do you think has motivated him to come out as vocal as he has been?
Yeah, I mean, I know that I did hear about things. I mean, in jail, I couldn't tune into these shows and whatnot. And I think he was sort of pushing and pushing and pushing ever further, basically sticking, poking the hornet's nest.
Yeah, poking the hornet's nest, yes.
Yeah, and I mean, if I had been able to, you know, pull back the reins a little bit, I would have. But I couldn't do anything.
Now you see, not you, but Alfred, his sense is that he feels that the regime, this Talmudic regime in Germany, is about to go away, and that therefore he is putting himself down in history as being on the side of right and vocalizing it clearly and effectively, because he has been effective. They wouldn't go after him otherwise.
Exactly.
Do you feel that is one of his motivations?
His motivation is to bring an end to the lies and crimes of the perpetrators of all this. I mean, when he realized and understood what is really going on in the world, he just felt, look, if not me, then who? Because he has the knowledge, he has the wherewithal, the intelligence, and he has the courage to do so. And so he just feels it's his life's mission to fix this problem. So his intentions are very, very noble. I mean, it is just, you know, he's basically, you know, sacrificed himself in, he knew this was not going to end with, you know, that he's just going to be able to carry on forever. He knew this would was basically lead to the gulag for him. But his mission is to wake people up and thereby to turn this ship around. And I mean, that's my mission too. I might have a slightly different style, and that's fine. We need all of us to be at this. And, you know, he explained it in court too, because the judge kept on misinterpreting things that Alfred was saying as threats. He says, no, I'm just warning. It's like if you're telling somebody, don't go out in this big blizzard, because it might, you know, you might get lost and not come home because you might freeze to death. That's a warning to the person. That's not a threat. A threat is if you're saying, look, I'm going to shoot you if you do this or that or the other thing. That's a threat. But so he was trying to illustrate that what Alfred is doing, he's just pointing out what the Jewish elite is doing and saying, and their actions against us. So, but they've turned everything on its head and make it sound like, well, Alfred is the one who is doing all these evil and bad things. No, it's completely been turned upside down on its head. So he's the messenger. He's like the weatherman. So don't shoot the weatherman just because he tells you there's a big storm coming up, you know, and you don't like that storm. So you're going to shoot the weatherman. Well, that's not going to make that storm. It's not going to prevent the storm. So Alfred is the weatherman here. And he's, you know, basically we shouldn't be shooting the messenger.
And while you were obviously mixed in with the German prison population, you're nothing more at this stage, quite frankly, than a political prisoner of this Talmudic system that runs Germany. What was the mood or the tone of the fellow prisoners who came to understand why you were there?
Oh, my goodness. I felt that I was very well respected and loved in the prison population, and not by everybody. I mean, I'm not going to make a sweeping generalization, but, you know, I did feel like I was surrounded by love there. And it's really interesting when I would first, you know, encounter somebody and you're talking, you know, you're going for a walk at the courtyard hour, and you naturally ask each other, why are you here and what's going on? And I would tell them I'm a political prisoner. And they, what does that mean? Oh, I'm here because I said the wrong thing. And the German prisoners with whom I would speak, they would just drop their jaws in astonishment initially. Because, you know, no, how can that be? We have complete freedom of speech. It's in our Grundgesetz, which means the foundational law of Germany. We have complete freedom of speech. And, of course, that's what they learn in school. And they believe that, along with all the other lies. But, oh, wait a minute. If you start talking about the Holocaust, oh, well, that's different, they say. But then they start to think about it. And in the prison population, I would say that they are much more willing and open to listening, because they themselves are there for, you know, maybe they've come on hard times or whatever. Like, I mean, they're all there for different reasons, but still, they generally are going to be more open to listening. And they did. I mean, they did. A lot of people gained a whole new understanding of what's going on in Germany from, you know, their encounters with me.
Mm. And the lesson that you really should, that, you know, here for everybody that's listening still, and thank you everybody for listening, first show for the Fetch here on Inside the Eye Live, is Monica, the main thing that people need to shed is fear, isn't it?
Oh yes, that's so true, because our fear equals their power. I mean, they use this fear against us, that, and there's a reason why they keep on making us scared with just everything. I mean, they if we shed our fear, it basically turns it around, and they are the ones in panic, and they are in panic mode. That's why they're getting crazier and crazier with their actions, and why, you know, things like the German court system, it's so bizarre that you can't even defend yourself there without committing new crime. And I mean, they are in panic mode, and they are just going all out.
Monica, don't the people in court feel embarrassed knowing that they are part of the charade, because they can't be stupid people?
Yeah, I would think so. And that brings me back to something that Alfred was with his strategy in court. I mean, basically not a single person that sat through that trial could say afterwards, oh, we just didn't know, we just didn't understand, you know, we just didn't understand it. No, they are all guilty, because they understand the picture perfectly well. And that whole trial, the reason it went on so long is because the videos were being shown, Alfred's videos that he has made, you know, these brainwashing series and the 9/11 gatekeepers and controlled opposition, and all these videos were being shown, even the videos that I recommend at the end of my short 6-minute video called Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust, the one in which I apologize to my mother's spirit. At the end of that video, I recommended that the viewer, to learn more, watch these three videos. And I named three videos there, and it went on the screen. And the judge asked me, why did you recommend those? And I explained that they were very helpful in my education. And even the titles created a little bit of a story in and of itself. The first one was Questioning the Holocaust, Why We Believed. The second one was The Greatest Problem of Our Times, and that was Ursula Haverbeck. And the third one was Off Your Knees, Germany, Ernst Zundel, so his story. And that those titles tell a story just right there in a nutshell. And so we watched those videos too and had them translated. Of course, the ones that were in English anyway. And that's why it took so long. So that was a huge education for everybody that was in that courtroom. And like you say, they don't get to those jobs by being stupid. They're intelligent, but they're obviously working for the wrong master. They've sold their soul to the devil. And at some point, you know, that's not going to do them. It's not going to do them any favors in the end, really.
And Monica, with that, you've welcomed the new year on Inside the Eye Live. Thanks for coming.
Oh, thank you so much, Dennis, for having me. It's been just a delight. And I want to echo what your previous guest had said in the previous hour about just thanking you for all the great work that you do. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Monica. Monica Schaefer, for everybody. Again, now released political prisoner from Germany, back safely in Canada. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care. Have a great afternoon in America, and we'll see you all Thursday for Inside the Eye Live, prime time.